4th of January here on Community Radio 3CR. My name's Jacob Grech, and I don't normally do music programs on 3CR. Normally you'd find me talking politics about the military-industrial complex on a Friday rave at 5 o'clock on Fridays or through the summer season at 9 o'clock on a Saturday mornings with my co-host Mercedes Zanker. But today I've been asked to play a bit of music, which is changing hats for me somewhat. So we're going to start by playing you a little track, and I'll back announce it when it's done.
Some bring the news in a sermon on the mountain, and some bring the news in a blueprint or a bulletin, but I like those who come with a passion of a vision, like a child with a gift, like a friend with a question. William Morris was one, in a story, in a song, in the patterns that he wove, in the colours that he loved, in the hope that he gave, he brought the news from nowhere.
My mind's eye, I can see him still standing with his grey beard waving like the foam of the sea, with his shaggy hair shaking and his clear eyes shining as he tells all who listen how different life could be.
And he rages at the wealthy with their mutilated vision, making money the measure for everything they do, and the ugliness that kills, and the lives that are broken on the wheels that turn for the profits of the few. Some bring the news in a sermon on the mountain, and some bring the news in a blueprint or a bulletin, but I like those who come with a passion of a vision, like a child with a gift, like a friend with a question. William Morris was one, in a story, in a song, in the patterns that he wove, in the colours that he loved, in the hope that he gave, he brought the news from nowhere. He turned from his class and he made the lonely journey through the river of fire. And when he reached the other side, he joined the ones who had nothing, the poor and the hungry, and their cause was his till the day that he died.
For he saw that in them a spark lay hidden, and he saw that in them a hope still burned for the great change coming, when the shoddy rule of mammon would be shattered like a hulk that the storm has overturned.
And some bring the news in a sermon on the mountain, and some bring the news in a blueprint or a bulletin, but I like those who come with the passion of a vision, like a child with a gift, like a friend with a question. William Morris was one, in a story, in a song, in the patterns that he wove, in the colours that he loved, in the hope that he gave, he brought the news from nowhere.
When our desires are freed, he said, there'll be no schools or prisons, no parliaments or leaders to coerce us with their laws.
No property, no money to raise false divisions, and there can be an end to the endlessness of wars.
And work will be a sharing, and work will be a pleasure, when the things we make are born out of beauty and of need, in a world made whole.
He said we all can be creators, not winners and losers, in a game of grab and greed.
And some bring the news in a sermon on the mountain, and some bring the news in a blueprint or a bulletin, but I like those who come with the passion of a vision, like a child with a gift, like a friend with a question.
William Morris was one. In a story, in a song, in the patterns that he wove, in the colours that he loved, in the hope that he gave, he brought the news from nowhere. He took delight and he looked with eyes of wonder at the skin and the body and the beauty of the earth.
We must cherish the fields and the woods and the rivers,
for if we defile our home,
he said,
what then will life be worth? And some there were who said he was just another dreamer, but his dream danced on, though the years turned to stone, and his dream shimmers still like the sunlight in winter, for a dream is the door to a world unknown.
So honour to the man,
and honour to the dreamer, and to all the men and women the history books ignore, who would not turn aside for the prize and the clamour, but held to vision that they saw.
And some bring the news in a sermon on the mountain, and some bring the news in a blueprint or a bulletin, but I like those who come with a passion of a vision, like a child with a gift, like a friend with a question. William Morris was one, in a story, in a song, in the patterns that he wove, in the colours that he loved, in the hope that he gave, he brought the news from nowhere, from nowhere, from nowhere.
That was, of course, Leon Russellson from his 1986 album, Bringing the News from Nowhere. And as well as playing a few tracks on Rotations today, I'm actually joined via the wonders of modern technology, all the way from his home in London, by the man himself, Leon Russellson. Leon, welcome to 3CR.
Thank you.
Yeah, so you're in London at the moment.
I am in Wembley, for something more precisely. Oh, famous football.
Okay, and I guess I'm going to try to go back. I don't want to go into a whole, make it sound like a history program, but last week I was hanging out with a couple of my besties, one of whom introduced me to your music 40 or so years ago. And when I told her I was doing this week, she brought out an old thick vinyl LP from 1959 called Songs Against the Bomb that you played on. She also, you know, over the years has told me first-hand stories of things like the Aldermaston March. Regular listeners will know Tanya, so big shout-out to Tanya McConville. But can you give us a bit of an idea of the time and how you first got involved in writing and playing your songs?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. I'm 91. It's a long, many, many years. It's very difficult for me to pinpoint which particular bit of which particular year anything happened. But I really guess I started writing. I was a big fan of Alexander Pope when I was at school. Uh-huh. And he one of his poems he writes, yes, I am proud. I must be proud to see men not afraid of God, afraid of me, because his satire did wound the great. And I had this illusion that if I wrote satirical songs, I might prick the pomposity of the great and the good and the politicians, which of course didn't happen. But I continued to write songs, not just satirical ones, but personal ones and all sorts of political and songs. And I've been doing it for something like 70 years, I guess.
Wow,
like that. Yeah, it's. I think starting with writing satirical songs was a very good way of starting of writing songs, because you've got to be sharp, you've got to know how to use rhyme, you can't waste words, everything has got to make a point. So I think it was a good schooling for writing, for songwriting.
Right. You also have to, a lot of your songs using satire, say what couldn't be said if you were straight out saying them, I guess. You can not hide things, but get message across through rather bleak humour.
Yes, humour is important.
Yeah. And, okay, so I want to play one of your early songs now. I was thinking of something from, you know, Songs for City Squares, perhaps.
What?
That goes back, doesn't it?
That was my first recording, an EP on Topic. Okay, that's a long time ago.
All right. Well, we're having a similar situation with our Labour Party politicians as you're having back in England. So I'm just going to play now just the song, Battle Hymn of the New Socialist Party.
And I set this song to a very fine old dirge, which some of you may be a bit young to remember. Cloth cap and the working class as images are dated, for we are Labour's avant-garde and we were educated. We feel we ought to drop clause 4 to make the public love us more, and just to show we're still sincere, we sing the red flag once a year. Firm principles and policies are open to objections, and a streamlined party image is the way to win elections. So raise the umbrella high, the bowler hat and Eton tie. We'll stand united, raise a cheer, and sing the red flag, oh, once a year. Although we may be socialists, we're too discreet to stress it, and nationalisation is a flop, so let's confess it. We'll reform the country bit by bit, so nobody will notice it. Then, ever after, never fear, we'll sing the red flag once a year. We shall not cease from mental fight till every wrong is righted, and all men are equal quite, and all our leaders are knighted. For we are sure, if we persist to make the New Year's honours list, then every loyal Labour peer will sing the red flag once a year. So vote for us and not for them, we're just as true to NATO, and we'll be as calm and British when we steer the ship of Stato. We'll stand as firm as them to show we're patriotic gentlemen, though man to man shall brothers be to keep the bombs our policy. So raise the mushroom clouds on high, within their shade we'll live and die. Though cowards flinch and traitors sneer, we'll sing the red flag once a year.
Yeah, that was from Songs from City Squares, Battle Hymn of the New Socialist Party. And just to prove we're still sincere, we'll sing the red flag once a year.
There's a little story about this. There was a satirical television program in England called That Was the Week That Was. I don't know whether you remember it at all. It was somebody called Ned Sheeran produced it, and they played this song on it. They used to have occasional songs and satirical sketches and things like that. And after it had been played, Ned Sheeran, the producer of the program, phoned me up and said, "We've had an offer to record that song." Now, at the time, I hadn't recorded anything, so I thought this was very exciting. I said, "Well, who's offered to record it?" And he said, "The Conservative Party." So I had a good laugh and said, no, that is not the point of it. So it's quite funny.
Yes, yeah. You're not going to be that guy. But it's funny, the stories, like you say, that how you feel personally about that. One of the things I want to ask you, because many of your songs feature the lives of ordinary people, how they're reacting to the chaotic world we find ourselves in, and often those left behind. You know, I'm thinking a little bit further on, things like Tim McGuire and Going to Build a Motorway. How important is the story? Do you think it is, from a songwriting perspective and a storytelling perspective, to have that, I guess, grounding in the actual person, in your normal human being?
Well, I'm not a folky, and I've never sung folk songs, but I did learn from folk song that the best use of song, the best way approach to song, is to see it as telling stories about people. I don't think song is sometimes used as a vehicle for the songwriter to express his or her views about the world or about their love situation. Or I don't think that's a good use of the song form. I think I don't want to tell people what to think, and I don't want to tell people what I think. I want to just tell stories about people. And so in a sense, I see song as a form of theatre, because that's what theatre does. You don't get the writer of the play coming on stage and telling people what's going on or what he thinks or anything. You make your point by telling a story about people, and that's what I try to do in all the songs that I've written.
Right. Okay. I might play a song about two people now. I hope I'm sure you remember it. One of my favourite ones. She was crazy. He was mad.
That's an early song. Strangely, I started writing that song in French. I can't imagine why. I don't know. Il est fou, elle est folle, ensemble ils dansent, something like that. I don't know why I did that. I mean, I'm not fluent. My wife is a French speaker, but even then, that's no excuse. I'm not fluent in French at all. But somehow it came to me in French, and then I thought, this isn't going to work. Why don't I translate it into an English voice? So I did. Yeah. And I really enjoy this song, actually.
She was crazy, he was mad. Together they danced. He believed her to be the Queen of Sheba. She was convinced that he was a prince, and they were dancing together in the wind and the weather. She was crazy, he was stark, staring mad. I look here, said the man in the grey flannel skin, and planted on his bald head, keep off the grass. It's absolutely clear that you can't dance here, cos you haven't got a licence, your credentials won't pass. And according to subsection A in paragraph Z, you've defaulted on your payments for the upkeep of the dead. She was crazy, he was mad, together they danced. He believed her to be the Queen of Sheba. She was convinced that he was a prince, and they were dancing together in the wind and the weather. She was crazy, he was stark staring mad. Oh, look here, said the fellow with the two glass eyes, and plastered on his wall face, vote for me. It's absolutely clear that you can't dance here, cos you're clogging up the drains of our democracy. The machine is geared for action, the direction straight ahead, and you ought to be at work producing poppies for the dead. She was crazy, he was mad, together they danced. He believed her to be the Queen of Sheba. She was convinced that he was a prince, and they were dancing together in the wind and the weather. She was crazy, he was stark staring mad. Look here, said the chappie with a double-barrel chin, grinning like a crater through his barbed wire teeth. It's absolutely clear that you can't dance here, cos we're holding mock manoeuvres on this part of the heath. Now a march in strict formation would be jolly well bred, instead of dancing on the coffins of our patriotic dead. She was crazy, he was mad, together they danced. He believed her to be the Queen of Sheba. She was convinced that he was a prince, and they were dancing together in the wind and the weather. She was crazy, he was stark staring mad. So they turned on the searchlights and they switched off the sun, and they built white walls round the dancing pair. Now from everywhere people come and stare at the man and the woman who are dancing there. And the profits from the peep show, the authorities said, would be spent on reproducing plastic Popeyes for the dead. She was crazy, he was mad, together they danced. He believed her to be the Queen of Sheba. She was convinced that he was a prince, and they were dancing together in the wind and the weather. She was crazy, he was stark staring mad.
And then I want to ask you another question, Leon. A big part of your songwriting career took place during the Cold War, where there was a distinct enemy. The nature of the enemy has changed now and appears to be, well, you know, I mean, this week I reckon it's Venezuela. I don't think you've got it in England, but over here in Australia we're constantly being told about the threat from China. And, of course, global terrorism and narco traffickers and all the rest of them are the new, I guess, what used to be the enemy, the Russian menace. How do you think that has changed the nature of how we react to what's going on in the world?
Well, it's always useful for the ruling classes to take the minds off the electorate to point to an outside enemy to try and divert their attention from what their own governments are doing. So I guess that's what happened. Of course, at the height of the Cold War, it was close to being a nuclear war, as we know. It was like what there was a I believe a false alarm that a Russian submarine thought they were being attacked, and it's only because they checked that they didn't in fact launch a nuclear bomb in order to reply to what the attack they felt they were suffering. So and of course we probably had the whole palaver about what to do if the bomb drops and the fallout shelters. We remember all that, and of course you had Bob Dylan's song as well about it. So I've forgotten the. So at that time, there was a. Now, of course, the threat in England at the moment is from asylum seekers and immigrants. That's being used as a weapon also, which is awful, and yes, has helped the rise of an extremely anti-immigrant right-wing party called Reform.
Yeah.
Nigel Farage probably heard of that.
Which
is very worrying because it's more or less a fascist party and it's quite high in the polls. So this happens all the time, doesn't it? The governments divert attention from their own defects by pointing at an enemy outside.
I was sitting on the sofa with the telly set on and my mind just an empty think tank, watching a party political broadcast on behalf of the National Bank. When the lights went out and the telly set exploded, then the Armageddon man marched in with his rocket launcher boots and his flamethrower eyes and his reinforced blast-proof skin. And above his mega warhead was a nuclear umbrella stamped with a Union Jack. And a voice boomed out of his megaphone mouth, said the enemy's poised to attack. The enemy's poised out there. The enemy's poised like a dangerous bear. The enemy's poised to catch you unaware. The enemy's poised to attack. Well, I wasn't too willing to do any killing, but I knew where my duty lay, 'cause they told me, when your country calls you to fight for freedom's cause, you know you've got to obey. So I stepped outside where platoons of people were cheering for all they were worth, and the bishop said a blessing and we vowed to follow our leader to the end of the earth. And I fell into line to receive my regulation anti-radiation pills and suicide pack. Then I followed the sign which said, follow the sign which says the enemy's poised to attack. The enemy's poised out there. The enemy's poised like a dangerous bear. The enemy's poised to catch you unaware. The enemy's poised to attack. Soon we came to a silent city where the house of pity was falling to dust. And the wind was heavy with the stench of sewers and the sky leaked flakes of rust. At the centre of the city was a gaping pit, and the crumbling slopes around were alive with people scrabbling to stop themselves falling through the hole in the ground. And an orderly force of uniformed guards used electric shock batons to prop them back. Eyes front came the order from the Armageddon man, because the enemy's poised to attack. The enemy's poised out there. The enemy's poised like a dangerous bear. The enemy's poised to catch you unaware. The enemy's poised to attack. So we marched, it seemed, on the edge of a dream, through fields that were stained blood red. where the villagers' huts were on fire and the rivers were thick with the swollen dead. And clouds of chopper birds dropped orange stars that scarred the sky. And a woman cradling a silent child was singing a lullaby. Then I heard a scream, and where the woman had been was a shroud of skin burned black. It's all in the plan, boom the Armageddon man against the enemy poised to attack. The enemy's poised out there. The enemy's poised like a dangerous bear. The enemy's poised to catch you unaware. The enemy's poised to attack. So we marched on past beggar children squatting on a desolate plain. And I saw they were gnawing metal slugs to kill the hunger pain. And each child's eyes were dead moons, each child's belly was a hollow drum. Then I saw that the line of children stretched from here to kingdom come. And I thought my head would burst with a silent scream, and my nerves were beginning to crack. No wavering now, said the megaphone mouth, that the enemy's poised to attack. The enemy's poised out there. The enemy's poised like a dangerous bear. The enemy's poised to catch you unaware. The enemy's poised to attack. Then at last we paused on the edge of a gorge that was deep and dark as the tomb. And I saw the sun turn black, and I heard a sound like the crack of doom. And as I gazed across that gorge as in a mirror, I could see the identical picture of the Armageddon man and people just like me. And around the turning world, the voice howled out and another voice echoed back. The enemy's poised, the enemy's poised, the enemy's poised to attack. The enemy's poised out there. The enemy's poised like a hawk in the air. The enemy's poised to catch you unaware. The enemy's poised to attack. The next thing I knew, I was sitting on the sofa and my brow was bathed in sweat. And the man on the screen was explaining the need for a balanced nuclear threat. And the words marched out of his elegant mouth in well-drilled, disciplined rows. They've been trained to overrun my brain and ice it with death till it froze. And every well-bred word wore a smiling mask and flew the Union Jack. Then a voice in my head stood up and said, it's the enemy poised to attack. It said the enemy's poised right here. The enemy feeds on hatred and fear. The enemy hides behind a cultured veneer. The enemy lies without shame. The enemies are ready to murder and maim. The enemy does what he does in our name. The enemy's poised to attack.
And that was The Enemy's Poised to Attack from Leon's 1983 album Temporary Loss of Vision. And before that, I forgot to back announce, we had She Was Crazy, He Was Mad from the album Palaces of Gold, which was in 1974.
Yeah, and we're facing the same thing here. Our fascist parties haven't gone as far as Farage and Reform, but just in the last few years we've seen fascist groups, Voice for Australia, they're not actually fascist, they're Voice for Australia, want immigration reform and things like that. But they wear black shirts and their leaders give each other the Nazi salute, and one of their leaders actually used a quote from Mein Kampf in his legal defence a couple of weeks ago, but he's not a fascist. And you wrote about that some years ago now. I'm trying to think. A Question of Numbers.
Yes.
Yes, I'm sure I've played that on my regular radio show when we were getting ready for a big fascist rally, but I'm going to play it again now.
The
gentlemen talked, you remember, of stemming the alien flood. Our cities are being invaded, he said, soon the streets will be rivers of blood. He said, prejudice isn't the issue, and it isn't a question of skin, which is surely a matter of plain common sense to stick by your own kith and kin. We're breeding a nation of half-castes, diluting the blood of our race. His neck turned purple with passion, the veins bulged blue in his face. It was all a question of numbers. Too many of them would appear to threaten Great Britain's traditions, though just how, and he didn't make clear. The wise ones tut-tutted in chorus, for they quite disapproved of his views. But to be on the safe side, they bolted the doors and carefully tightened the screws. Now the blacks face a maze of restrictions enshrined in the Immigrant Acts. The rules cut off parents from children, and this is called facing the facts. But still, it's a question of numbers. Now the lady takes up the refrain. Her voice falls like dust in the desert from her clearly superior brain. She says soon they'll be swamping our culture, the culture that made Britain great. What, no more Henry, no lords, no weekend shooting grouse with a duke on his country estate? She said a few in their place would be welcome, but we can't have them coming in hordes. And the wise ones assented in chorus from the Houses of Commons and Lords. They differed on clauses and quotas, on what figure the inflow might reach. But the blacks, they agreed, were the problem, and this was called freedom of speech. Free speech, said the judge, is my sermon. I declare that it wouldn't be right for me to put people in prison just for saying that black isn't white. If you're worried about immigration, you must have the freedom to speak. But don't overuse words like niggers and coons. Say not more than three times in 1 week, because it's all a question of numbers. The words echo out far and wide, and some spread them soft like a smokescreen. They're the ones with something to hide. And some spread them loud like gang warfare to the beat of the devil's own drum. In the head of a youth down in Hoxton, they fester like weeds in a slum. If it's all a question of numbers, the fewer the better, it seems. His mind was a swamp of frustration. There were rivers of blood in his dreams. He yearned for the days of war glory, when Englishmen fought the good fight, defending the white cliffs of Dover, so that Christmas would always be white. Now Britain was second division, when they ought to be ruling the waves. They're taking our jobs and our homeland, he says, those bastards we once sold as slaves. In church on Sunday as usual, all dressed in their best they were there. The judge, the gent and the lady soared high on the wings of a hymn and a prayer. Brotherhood was the bishop's servant. All are equal, he said, in God's sight. And to him a black skin doesn't matter at all, as long as the soul is white. So while the judge, the gent and the lady were praying for guidance and light, the Hoxton youth gathered a lynch mob, and they armed themselves well for the fight. That evening they went on the rampage, they were flying the Union Jack. And the cries of the beaten and dying were drowned by the screams of send them all back. The papers were full of the story. There was no doubt at all where they stood. A spell in the army for thugs, said the Mail, would do them a power of good. When the lady read of the killings, her face was filled with distress. The trouble with our lower classes, she said, is they've got no bloody finesse. I deplore this barbaric behaviour. The gentleman said, I agree. Well, I warned them that this would be coming, but nobody listens to me. Now the judge was severe in his sentence, said your motives might be of the best, but you not only set upon innocent folk, you did it on God's day of rest. Now the gentleman dreams of a peerage,
the lady is ruling the land. And the good judge sits snoozing in comfort in his club with his port in his hand. But the Hoxton youth's bitterly brooding, just a number in his prison cell. They said we should cut down their numbers, he thinks, so why are they giving us hell? Because it's all a question of numbers. The people who matter agree, but how many's too many, I wonder? And that too many might include me. But if it's really a question of numbers, perhaps the solution might be to sweep up the judges, the ladies, the gents, and drop them all into the sea. Because if it's all a question of numbers, it's clear they should all play their part. Let them swim off to some desert island and get off our backs for a start.
That was A Question of Numbers from the 1980 album For the Good of the Nation.
I hooked on to your Live from Your Lounge Room concert you did with Rob Johnson a couple of months back. And while you were in nighttime in London, I was sitting in the Central Australian desert, actually, as I told you, watching it. It was a little bit surreal. But one of the things you mentioned, and we're talking about enemies, one of the things you mentioned was that you're a supporter of Palestine Action.
But not openly, because I didn't want to get arrested, I'm afraid. Isn't that amazing? Of course, you've had all these people, these activists, going to Trafalgar Square or Houses of Parliament and showing a sign which says, "I am against genocide in Gaza. I support Palestine Action." And they all get arrested. Isn't it amazing?
Yes.
A proscribed organisation under the Anti-Terrorism Act. So you've got the absurd situation of people, elderly men in wheelchairs, women who are clearly not terrorists, being arrested for terrorism. And there's always a large Jewish bloc on it.
Yeah.
And the police here can't get their heads around this. And this has been reported to me. I haven't been well enough, actually, to join these. But the police go up to the Jewish bloc and ask if they need protection, because they cannot get their heads around the idea that there are Jews who are not Zionists and don't support Israel.
Yeah, it's the same happening here. We have a large Jewish contingent always coming to the Palestine rallies, and they're of course called self-hating Jews by the Zionist lobby. It's absolutely crazy. But again, taking it down to the personal, I mean, you've written a few songs about Palestine over the years, and one that really got to me was a song called The Last Chance, but I haven't got time to play that today. But I'm going to play one called The Ballad of Rivka and Muhammad.
Yeah, I wrote that in 2014, I think, when Israel were bombing Gaza to rubble again.
Yeah.
And it is a reminder that their war on Gaza did not start after the Hamas attack, as our Guardian keeps lying, saying that it was triggered by the Hamas attack. That isn't true. The version on record is the one that I would play.
Well,
and it's got a new life now. It's been sung by other people now.
I was watching the news from Gaza, and I closed my eyes in despair. And when I awoke from my slumber, the young girl was standing there. She said, "My name is Rivka. They killed me because I'm a Jew. I died in the ghetto of Vilna in 1942. The ghetto was like a prison. They wouldn't allow us to leave. Some said they were going to kill
kill us all. We didn't know what to believe. That day I wore my new red dress my bubba had made for me, and in that crowded ghetto it made me feel proud and free. I looked up at the soldier, I looked him in the eye. I forgot to bow my head down, and so I had to die. He smashed my head with his rifle because I was too bold. I was killed in the Vilna ghetto when I was 7 years old. And then, out of the darkness, a young boy's gaze met mine. He said, "My name is Mohammed, my country is Palestine. I've lived all my life in Gaza, and the only time I feel free is when I go down to the harbour and feel the wind from the sea." That day I went with my cousins, we ran down to the beach to play, and the soldier fired a shell at me and blew my life away. They think they can crush our spirits, they want us to feel afraid, locked up in the prison of Gaza, the prison that they have made. To them our lives don't matter, they force us to live in a cage. I was killed on the beach in Gaza at 11 years of age. They think that we don't deserve freedom or belong to the human race. Mohammed, my brother, said, "Rivka, this world is a cold, cold place." Mohammed, my friend, my brother, let us leave this world of war. Then each took the hand of the other, and then they were seen no more. But I saw politicians and spokesmen lining up to speechify, and every word was a hypocrite, and every word was a lie. And I saw children still being slaughtered, the monster must have its fill, while the people with power turned a blind eye and supplied the weapons that kill. And enable the monster to kill.
That was the Ballad of Rivka and Mohammed from the 2014 album Where Are the Barricades? You're listening to Rotations on Community Radio 3CR as part of the summer programming with me, Jacob, joined on the line by Leon Russellson.
Listeners might remember the Spycatcher saga. Can you tell us about that?
I think I got the book from Australia. Spycatcher, of course, was banned by Thatcher. Margaret Thatcher said we should not be. It contained secret information that the plebs were not allowed to read, and a group called Campaign for, I think it's Freedom in Broadcasting, something like that, asked me to write a song which would encapsulate the main points of Spycatcher and would therefore be illegal, as decreed by the government, and then would and that would ridicule the whole banning of all of it. So I did get the book from Australia, actually. Oh, right. I remember, and I read it. It's not the most fascinating book I've ever read. But anyway, I tried to put as much of the material in the book, which I thought would be illegal, to disseminate, in the song, and I expected it to be banned. But what actually happened was, of course, I did it with the Oyster Band and with Billy Bragg, so to give it a bit of pop song credibility. And it started getting aired. At first, I think the DJs were a bit worried, but then they started playing it. And then it got into the indie singles charts, which was...
Now listen, children, while I sing this ballad I've just made about a Peter, right, not rabbit, a spy catcher by trade. I'll sing of how he joined a special gang called MI5, who guard the nation's secrets so that liberty may thrive. And of how young Peter quick to learn soon got to know the ropes, the trick of picking locks, the art of opening envelopes. And of how the senior officers began their working day by trying to solve the crossword in the Times, needless to say. But of all the strange things I relate, the strangest thing to me is that this doggerel I'm singing contravenes the rule of three. For Nanny, God bless Nanny, thinks it wouldn't do for you to know about the naughty things that grown-up people do. SF, Special Facility, was Peter's favourite toy, and night and day he played with it like any little boy. The tapping phones and bugging rooms were things he loved the best. 5 years, says Wright, we bugged and burgled at the state's behest. They bugged the Russian embassy, which wasn't very chic, so they bugged the French, the Chinese, the Egyptian and the Greek. They bugged Khrushchev's room in Claridge's and listened in with care while Kate decided on his tie and how to part his hair. They bugged colonial conferences, then they turned their minds to keeping tabs on militants and lefties of all kinds. Trade unionists and students were the targets of their wiles. They burgled CP members' homes and stole the party's files. And what did it add up to? And what did it avail? All this bugging and burgling and intercepting mail. Did it save us from the Russians? Did it help to keep us free? Did it keep this country green and pleasant?
Did it buggery?
But of all the strange things I relate, the strangest thing to me is that this doggerel I'm singing contravenes the rule of three. The Nanny, God bless Nanny, thinks it wouldn't do for you to know about the naughty things that grown-up people do. The trouble was, says Wright, that we often were misled, and the Russians always seemed to be a step or two ahead. For whatever MI5 knew, the Russians knew it too. And when we knew, they knew, they knew, we knew, they knew, we knew. Penkovsky, was he theirs or ours, a triumph or a con? So back and forth and round the mazy dance went on. While Peter set up Operation Sunshine Big Group Choir, Dew and Mole were lovely names and saw them all misfire. But of all the strange things I relate, the strangest thing to me is that this doggerel I'm singing contravenes the rule of three. But Nanny, God bless Nanny, thinks it wouldn't do for you to know about the naughty things that grown-up people do. I fear the worst, says Peter, and this I can't forgive. For years this Secret Service has been leaking like a sieve. The evidence is growing, there is someone placed on high who is tipping off the Russians, a traitor and a spy. Is it Mitchell? Is it Hollis? The outfit's own DG. Incredible, I hear you say, but Wright would not agree. His finger points to Hollis, I'll unmask him if I can. He's ex-public school and Oxford, and I never liked the man. Gross farcical, but should we laugh or cry? For the CIA man Angleton names Wilson as a spy, and Cecil King in 68 decides to lead a coup against the Wilson government. So strange it must be true. And certain shady businessmen ask Peter for the gen to do the dirt on Wilson, keep him out of number 10. And a group of senior officers to write of their intent to save us from the clutches of a Labour government. But of all the strange things I relate, the strangest thing to me is that this doggerel I'm singing contravenes the rule of three. But Nanny, God bless Nanny, thinks it wouldn't do for you to know about the naughty things that grown-up people do. Now I haven't time to tell you of those other dirty tricks, like the plot to bump off NASA, but that was MI6. And of how the CIA
planned in 1965 to open up their sharky mouth and swallow MI5 alive. But one more thing I feel that I should bring to your attention. For all his pains, poor Peter never got his proper pension. So why not buy his book yourself and do the man some good, so he can die in comfort as ex-spy catchers should. And of all the things I've told you, the strangest thing to me is that this doggerel I've been singing contravenes the rule of three. For Nanny, God bless Nanny, thinks it wouldn't do for you to know about the naughty things the spy catchers do.
Leon, in closing, is there a particular favourite, apropos of nothing else, just because you like it, that you'd like us to play to go out with?
Yep. There is a song called Like Love. If I don't know if you've got that. And that would be, I wrote it for my wife.
Stay on the line, but thanks, Leon, for joining us here on Rotations on Community Radio 3CR, which is the home, I've got to say, of left-wing Melbourne.
That is unfortunately all we've got time for today on Rotations. My name's Ben Jacob. You can normally catch me and Mercedes at 5 o'clock on a Friday with a Friday rave. We're going to leave you now with Leon's request to end with a song called Like Love that he dedicates to his wife. Talk to you more at another time.
Like a game of chase on a trampoline, like a face-to-face over a grenadine, like a far-sight glance, like a soulful sigh, like the scatterbrain dance of a butterfly. Like love, felt like love. There were times when the lightning flashed and the thunder rolled, and the sky turned black and the world turned cold. But in good time, the storm clouds passed and the all clear sounded peace at last. And a touch as soft as a new May leaf brushed my five senses into life. And it felt like a game of chase on a trampoline. Like a face-to-face over a grenadine, like a far-sight glance, like a soulful sigh, like the scatterbrain dance of a butterfly. Like the sun's caress, like the firebird's flight, like a poppy dress, like a trick of the light, like a timeless daze, like a woozy tune, like a languorous maze in the midday moon. Like love, felt like love, felt like love. There were times when silence hung in the air like glass. Words beat their wings, but they could not pass. But a song unsung is a song unheard. But all it takes is a whispered word and a warm embrace to heal the hurt. And a willing smile that stirred my heart. And it felt like the sun's caress, like the firebird's flight, like a poppy dress, like a trick of the light, like a timeless daze, like a woozy tune, like a languorous laze in the midday moon. Like a sun-washed isle, like a mystery word, like a secret smile, like a memory bird, like rainbow fish, like two by two, like a midnight wish, like me and you. Like love, felt like love. Felt like a sun-washed isle, like a mystery word, like a secret smile, like a memory bird, like rainbow fish, like two by two, like a midnight wish, like me and you. Like love, felt like love, felt like love.